Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. My name is Peter Mingles. For those people that might be new or just kind of checking out the things that we do, Building Fortunes Radio started way back in 2012, beginning part of 2013. I was looking for a way to have a platform to be able to talk about the things that happen in home-based businesses. Previously, I was a little bit disgruntled, if you will. I decided that, you know what, I can't deal with this anymore. I was president of the ANMP, which stands for the Association of Network Marketing Professionals. I had kind of gotten really frustrated with people not really want to pay attention to some of the things that were critical about the industry. So I just said, you know what, I'm just going to check out for a while. And when I said I'm going to check out for a while, a lot of the people that are part of those organizations are the problem. So it's hard to fix the problem when you're working with people that are the problem. So I said, you know what, I'm done with this for a while. So I was working with a gal, and I said, you know, we really have to get back on the air again, and let's start doing that. So this way at least I have a voice and I can share different people's opinions of different and many things. And that's how we kind of get started. Well, as a result of that, I'm pretty big on being critical about the things that people need to be critical about. So I had a gentleman named Roger Van Vlissingen on one of our radio shows. Roger's a real smart guy. I like to work with smart people because, you know, they make some sense sometimes. And Roger wrote for SeekingAlpha.com, which is a website that talks about publicly traded companies. And he made some very critical and good points about MLM. So when he came on, he brought a friend, E. Robert Smith, good guy as well, and we talked about MLM. Well, Scott Johnson called me up and he says, you know, I was on that radio show. However, you know, there's something that you guys just didn't talk about a lot about. And I said, what's that, Scott? We talked about Herbalife. We talked about VEMA. We talked about the FTC and those types of issues. And he says, you know, people aren't talking about the tools scam. Well, I had been with Amway three separate times. I affectionately used the wrong verbs. I hired and fired myself three times with Amway. And it was primarily because of the tools scam. My background was in direct sales, so recruiting was never a problem for me. So they just wanted to talk about a lot of things related to, you know, books and tapes and functions. And I wanted to know more about how to sell the product, and they talked about books and tapes and functions. And when I was starting to look at it, I was like, well, we're not making money on or being paid on the commissions on the books or the tapes or the functions. So why are we focusing so much on this? I soon concluded that there's people making more money on the books and the tapes and the functions than they are on the opportunity, and they were basically using Amway as a front. So I quit, and then I joined again, and then I quit because I figured maybe I got the wrong perception or maybe the wrong downline. So I wanted to be open-minded enough and see, and I wound up joining and then wound up quitting again. And by the way, there's some – I'm telling you, Scott, I'm FlaglerBeach.tv. I think we're going to see a natural moment on the critter cam. I'm telling you, I see like a fox, I see some raccoons in the background. I'm not so sure if we're going to see a predatory moment. I'm not really sure. But anyway, FlaglerBeach.tv is one of the domain names we own. And because of the critter cam, you're going to be able to see some of the stuff that happens in my backyard. So anyway, so back to this conversation I was having with Scott. He was saying, you know, people aren't talking about this stuff. And I said, well, do you have a website? And he said, sure do. Stop the Amway toolscam.wordpress.com. So if you want to write that down, stop the Amway toolscam.wordpress.com. That's when I knew that he was talking about the same thing I was thinking about relative to the tools associated with Amway. So we started our conversation. Sometimes we do the radio show ourselves. Sometimes we do it with a guest. And tonight we have a guest. I'm going to keep my introduction a little bit short. But just out of sentimental reasons, Scott, it was right around this time that you made that fateful phone call, because it was on Labor Day, I think it was around 6 years ago, and we had an opportunity to spend a lot of time on the phone because most of my other customers weren't calling. So we had a nice conversation about those things, and I think the next week is when we actually started to do our own radio show. And like I said, sometimes we have guests and sometimes we do it ourselves. But thanks for being here on your own radio show, Scott Johnson.
Well, thanks, Peter. Yeah, I'm not sure if that fox is going to be able to consume any raccoons because he's been there for like a half hour chowing down. I saw him stop eating for a while, just kind of, you know, burping probably and getting
right.
his food settled. Now he's back eating again. So I think those raccoons could walk right up to him and, you know, he just has too much food in his stomach to even chase them. So.
Yeah,
now, the
sure.
raccoons don't know that, but, you know. But I think that's where we're at with Mr. Fox right now. It is interesting because, you know, we always see the raccoons back there. And I haven't looked at the camera for a few days, but this is, you know, the first time I've seen a fox in a long time in your backyard. So it's pretty interesting. But, yeah, you know, your experience with Amway is just like my experience was. I just wasn't informed enough to understand that most of the money was being made on the tools until I did find out about that. And then the more research I did, the more I realized that that's normal, you know, that we were not in a different organization as far as it was an exception to the rule. That was how most organizations are in Amway, is the upline makes several times more, you know, from the functions, like you say, books, tapes, and functions. And that was back in the day when there was cassette tapes. And so that was the, you know, the moniker for the tool. Now it's, you know, of course, progressed with technology. So there's still meetings, there's still books, there's still, you know, things like recordings, but now they're like MP3 and MP4 downloads. Some groups might still do CDs, but there's also phone apps. There are websites. There are voicemail, all these things that you pay for, and they make a tremendous amount of profit on all these things. And what makes it a scam, you know, in my mind, is the fact that the upline pretends that their material wealth came from Amway, but most of it actually came from these tools, and that's what makes it a scam. And they don't want to talk about that. They just keep the pretense that, you know, their lifestyle came from Amway, and they're not going to talk about all the money that they make from tools, which is unusual from the standpoint of you would think any other business, they would be, you know, bragging about that. Hey, look at all the money you can make in the tools. But obviously people would probably say, well, wait a second. I don't make that money until I get to about platinum, you know, which is roughly 100 people in the group, and then I have to pay into it until I get there, and my entire group has to pay into it until they get there. And it's just a losing proposition for most people. And it's just really hard to get to the point where you can make profit from the tools. And I think most people would just quit. And that's the main reason that the upline doesn't want to talk about it. And that's what makes it a scam. Now, not all MLMs have tool scams. But every MLM that I've ever looked at, and I'm still looking for an exception, what they do lack is retail sales. And that's sales to customers who are not distributors, you know, just real customers. And that's what I think is lacking, if not in every MLM, almost everyone, because I haven't found one yet where I can say, yes, that company has at least half of the sales going to outside customers versus the internal consumption by the distributors. And that's kind of how the FTC, you know, goes after companies over the years. And they make them have at least 50% retail sales. So there's no law that dictates that, and I think that's unfortunate. I wish there was a law that said at least half of your profit should come from retail sales, but there's not. And so the FTC is really under-regulating MLMs at this point, such that a bunch of them are out there with most of the consumption going to the distributors, even though that is an illegal pyramid by the FTC's own definition. So it's just not being regulated properly, you know, in my view. But anyway, that's just some quick background that we, you know, try to put out there every show for the new listeners. We do have a great guest. and his name is Eric. It's not his real name, and we don't even know his real name, and we really don't care because he's here to tell his story, and it's a story that is probably familiar to anyone else who had been approached by this company. And so we just wanted to have him on this show because he's got a really good story as far as his experience in being approached by an MLM. And Eric, welcome to the show. Let me just start out with a question of, you know, just tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, where you came from, what you were doing when you were approached, and you know, just a little bit of that sort of environment that you were in when you were approached and how you were approached and that sort of thing. So, again, welcome to the show, and go ahead and start telling your story.
Oh, hi, this is Eric speaking, and thank you very much for the introduction. So, yeah, I'm Eric, and I'm a Chinese immigrant, but I lived in the United States for more than 10 years already. And I live in the I live in the East Coast of the United States. And as you know, like as an immigrant, like I definitely have like a group of the friends that are from, let's say, with a similar background, also let's say Chinese immigrants. And we always have like, say, let's say gatherings, and we also make like connections within the group very closely. And just recently, I had a, let's say, an old friend from the group contacting me, asking me if I want to make some extra money, which, I mean, everybody wants to make money. That's like understandable, and I do too. So I was also like in the mood to make, like, let's say, extra money and just to make my life better. So I asked him, what kind of opportunity you have? Is it like a part-time job, or is it like let's say gigs? Like, what kind of jobs you can provide? And this guy used to be, let's say, a very, as I said, like used to be like a close friend, not that close, but someone I respect, I would say, someone who is much more experienced than me, and who came to the United States like later than I did, but who is much older than me and had much more social experience than me. So I respected him a lot, and he told me this job offer, not really an offer, this job opportunity is financial related, and it's not related with what I learned before, like engineering stuff. It's completely new, but it makes money, and you also can learn a lot of, let's say, financial knowledge, like knowledge related in the financial field, and so you can make better decisions with your own, let's say, investments. And I was very interested, so I asked him, like, so can you give me more details? Then he said, well, I'm also not an expert on this. Why don't you join, let's say, a lecture or like a conference? And we always have conference like that for, let's say, Chinese immigrants, just because we're all like kind of new here. I mean, I'm not that new, but still not as native as most of the American citizens here. So he said, we always have this kind of lectures or like conference for newcomers so that you can learn how the economics works in the United States and how to make like wise decisions for investment. And why don't you join one of this? It's free. And usually we even provide food, he said. But now, because of COVID, like we have it on Zoom or like on, you know, like online version of the gathering. And I was like, sure, why not? This sounds like interesting. So I did join the first, like, ever, let's say, first show. I joined the first show, and it was a little bit different than what I thought. First of all, during the show, during the presentation, the presenter, the guy who presented there is also a Chinese guy, Chinese immigrant. And the focus he put on was not about like what the job would look like or how to make money through this job. It's more about like, see, I'm doing the job. I'm so rich now. I can live in such a, like, let's say, huge mansion. Like I'm just living such a good life because I did it. And also other kind of let's say thoughts, like your job, your like 9-to-5 job won't get you rich. Like you have to make some, let's say, big decisions in your life, like joining us to make yourself live a better like life. And it's like the focus was put mostly on there. And he did like go to some like very basic economic let's say knowledge or like financial let's say knowledge, but it's never really serious. Like it was very shallow, and then he stopped there. And the focus were always on like why our group is good, why joining us is important. That's the first thing I feel like kind of hello.
Eric, quick question for you. Was that financial overview, did it involve Robert Kiyosaki?
No, he actually introduced the 7-2 rules. So
okay.
it's about that's the only thing he introduced. That's the
okay,
only
just
thing.
Curious about that.
I would say I would say that's the only thing. Let's say that's the only thing important. Rule of 72.
Yes.
So
yes, okay.
that's the only thing. You have heard about that, right? So that's
yes,
there's
I have.
A formula about the number of the periods required to double an investment value. So 72 divided by R, which is the interest rate per period. So that basically, like if you have a 4% of interest rate, you can double your investment in 18 years. So that's the that's like the core idea of this formulation, and that's the main things he discussed during the presentation, and trying to tell me the 9-to-5 job is not going to get you rich. It's a trap, and you have to own your own business. They call themselves own business, and like, and I will tell you more details later. And that's one first thing that makes me feel a little bit like weird. Why it's supposed to be I was expecting it to be a lecture, more like a Coursera course, but I was apparently wrong. That's the first thing that made me feel a little bit awkward. And the second thing was like, I after the presentation. So the guy who introduced me to the presentation contacted me, like through messages, and asking me, what do you think about it? I was like, why do you care? You know, like I feel like it was like a middle school, let's say, teacher asking me, what do you think about the lecture? Like you have to write up something. And I was like, I don't know. I feel it's good. And he said like, oh, tell me more about it. What is good? What do you think about it? And I was like, why? Like, why do you care so much? But, I mean, to be polite, I still replied with my thought. I said, like, well, I like it, but it's, like, too shallow, and, like, I would like to know more about it. I was just being polite, but I think he probably take it as a hint that I was interested, and I was going to be one of them. So he said, like, okay, I will ask you to join, let's say, more presentations. And I said, sure. And then he asked me to join more, of course, in the following weeks. And there are different people in his group, all Chinese immigrants, all claiming to be very successful, like making $3 million, let's say, per year or something. And, yeah, it sounds like really nice, like they make that much money. But like every time the presentation, we're mostly focusing on like why it is so good to join us, and nothing really like economic related. I have learned, I would say. So after each presentation, this guy would ask me a question like, "What do you think about it? Do you want to join? Tell me what your thoughts are. Tell me what you learned from it." I was like, I really don't want to keep this conversation, like, you're not my advisor or something. You're not my teacher. Like, I don't have the obligation to report my progress to you. So I feel like a little bit violated at that moment. But still, I continue talking to him because I want to be polite. And at a point, he said, like, why don't you come over to my place? We haven't seen each other for a long time. And at the same time, there is a very famous, let's say, manager in my group, which is his upline, later I learned. So there's a very famous guy, a woman, who is like the star's employee in my company. Why don't you come over and you can talk. And I was like, sure, but don't make it too seriously. I am considering, let's say, side jobs. I am considering second job, but I'm not in the position that I have to do it or like I'm that serious about it. So don't make it such a big deal of it. And he said, no, just like casual chat, just like chatting with a friend. I said, sure, then why not? I have free dinner, right? So I went there and I did meet like his upline, and she also like keep telling me like, so you have a good degree, you have good education background, you are young and you are smart. She keep like telling me all those like kind words, and I was like at a point I feel like, oh, I didn't even know I was that good, but thank you so much. And then she suddenly turned to the topic like, so what do you think about our project? Like, do you want to join us? I said like, I'm not sure. And she was asking like, why are you not sure? Tell me why. And I was kind of, I don't know if you can relate to my feelings, but when people ask to your face, like, why not? The first thing that popped up to my mind was like, why do you care? Really, like, I met her for the first time, and she was asking me, kind of like forcing me to do it. And I think that's also a cultural thing, because when I was in China, in the Chinese culture, people don't like to reject people at the like face to face. People tend not to reject each other face to face. So when people are like that pushing, usually we would agree. Usually in the traditional Chinese culture, we would agree, even though it means like we need to pay something. Usually we just agree and we stop. But I mean, I lived here for too long already. I don't really buy that. So I was like, I asked her directly, why do you care? And she said, like, I'm thinking for you. I'm thinking for the good thing for you. You just need to pay $100 to join us. And then you can learn all these, like, things in details. And later you can decide you want to do the job or not. And I said, like, what kind of job? I still don't know what kind of job it is. She said, like, we sell the insurance. We sell the insurance premiums to customers. And we make plans for them, and we will tell them why we are good, why our decisions on the premium selection is better than the other agents. And I was like, okay, and why do I have to join your, let's say, why do I have to join your group to do this job? Because there are so many companies, so many agents selling premiums. And she was like, that means you didn't listen to the presentation. You should listen to them again. And that makes me feel like, you know, like it really sounds like she was, let's say, a teacher in the university or like professor in the university and scolding a student. And I was not very happy, to be honest. I was like, okay, and I will do that. And she said, you promise? And I got mad. I was like, no, I don't. I don't promise. I'm here not to listen to your lectures like this. Like, I was interested, but now I feel a little bit weird. And then she keeps asking, like, what do you feel weird about? This is such a good business. Like, this is so good. Like, she just keeps pushing, and she wants me to register and pay that $100. And then, I mean, at a point, I just can't take it anymore. I said, like, I just pretend that to be, like, agreeing. I said, like, okay, I will do that tonight. But before that, give me the name of your company. They didn't even give me the name of their company until that moment. And then I said, like, I need to do a bit of research online. After I said that, like, both of them, the friend of mine who I used to respect a lot and the woman, like, his upline, both of them got quite nervous. And the guy said, like, okay, I will give you the name and you can search online, but you need to know it's because the company is growing so fast. That's why so many people are jealous about us, and that's why you can see all the negative comments online. I said, okay, yeah, whatever. Like, I have a brain, and I will digest all those information and make a judgment by myself. And then I received the name of the company, which is the World Financial Group. I'm sure a lot of you may have heard about it. And then I did a bit research. So it turns out I can share with you like what I learned online. So it turns out it is a multi-level marketing business. But it's a little bit different than the pyramid, let's say, scheme. It's a little bit different that they do sell the products. It's not like they don't sell anything. They do sell products. But it's just like the major way of making money by them is to developing the downlines. So they have to get – that's why they also want me to join, because I'm going to cheat the – if I joined, the guy who introduced me in is going to be my upline. And he is going to make money through the – let's say the contract I signed with my clients. So that's how they make money. And the higher you are, the more money you make. And that's the thing. I think that's the same thing for – the common thing for all the multi-level marketing companies. And that's why everything was like so well designed to just try to get my attention and then bring me into the trap, kind of like it's kind of like a guilty trap. He tried to make me feel like I just can't reject, because they designed so many things for me. They invite me for dinner. They do everything for me. They invite me to free conference all the time. Blah blah blah. It's like everything they have designed, like specifically for me, and I just did the research and I found out what it really is, and I sent him an email saying like, hey, I don't think it's a very good business for me. I don't want to do it anymore. It's nothing against you. I really appreciate you giving me the chance, but it's just not my thing. Usually people should stop at this point when they receive an email like this. But this guy texts me again, like saying, like, why? Why is that? Can you tell me why? And I said, like, I'm not interested in, like, more explanations. Let's just end it here. And he said, like, do you treat me as a friend? Do you treat me as, like, a senior or something? And then I blocked him. And I think, like, it's kind of, like, uncontrollable. So I don't want to continue this conversation with him. But anyway, that's the end of, like, my experience. And I did the research, and I would say like they did sell something, but the whole business mode is it is multi-level marketing, and apparently they didn't tell me the truth when they tried to get me into the business, and I also don't think they were planning to tell me anyway. They did mention, oh, one thing I forgot to mention, they did set one thing during the dinner, let's say dinner party. They said, like, you are such a young guy with so many friends, so many, like, connections of qualities. Like I have a lot of professional, let's say, connections at work. You have so many professional connections. You have so many good friends. Also, a lot of them are non-Chinese. You can all develop them as your customer or, like, clients. That's, like, clearly, like, stated in the dinner party by them. And I was surprised. I asked them, like, oh, I usually avoid having any, let's say, economic, let's say, relationship with my friends, because it always ends up with, you know, like problems. I usually avoid doing that, doing business with my friends or something. And they said, oh, why don't you do that? This is the way you can make money. And that's also when I feel like things are a little bit different than I expected. So the whole thing is very clear. They only develop, let's say, clients from their friends or like family members, or like, you know, like I would put it very clearly, like for them, for this specific scheme, for this specific business mode, in my area, it's almost only Chinese people doing it. I'm not trying to stereotype anything, because, you know, like as immigrant, it's very difficult to make friends, and it's very difficult to, let's say, blend in. Especially for them, they just came in for like less than 2 years, and they can't really speak English. Like even I have a lot of problem in my English, you can tell. So it's more difficult for us to branch out and to make friends and to understand the society like you guys do, like your native people do. So we tend to stick together, and we tend to form, let's say, a smaller group. And because of this, When the multi-level marketing started at one person, it gets spread out very quickly. Because of the limited information they received, they tend to believe that's the case. Probably they didn't even use Google to search for the other information. They just listen to the uplines, and then they keep doing the things the upline told them to. So I'm really not trying to stereotype anything, especially not Chinese immigrants. Like, but this thing did happen a lot among the immigrants. I have a post on the Reddit, and there are other people saying in other areas it happens within, let's say, Indian immigrants or Latino immigrants. So it does happen as a group, because the immigrant groups are always more, let's say, connected, and people always know each other. It's easier for them to have easier for us to have this kind of, let's say, gathering, and people tend to believe each other, and people tend not to reject each other. So it did happen a lot. And I'm not saying we are dumb or something. It happens. But the reason for me to share this story is that I want people to know, if someone contact you, someone you know, or even very close contact you for this kind of business, the multi-level marketing business, you better do the research by yourself online. Do a thorough research. And you make decision based on whatever you collected, not whatever they told you. Because they don't tell you everything. They only tell you some aspects of it. To know the whole story, you need to really do the research by yourself, and you need to really discard the misinformation, and then it's up to you to decide if it's a legitimate, let's say, business. For me, I personally don't think the multi-level marketing is a thing for me, so I choose not to touch it. And another thing I want to bring up is, if you decide not to touch it, don't feel bad for rejecting your friends or close others, like significant other even, or even parents. Just reject. I think that's the way to go. If you don't want to do it, don't feel like you have to find a reason to convince them of anything. It's your decision. So they keep asking you why. There's no why. I'm an adult. I can do whatever legal as I want, right? I can reject this chance. If he thinks it's my loss, then it's my loss. I don't care. So basically, that's my story I can share, I think. And if you have questions, Scott and Peter, I'm here to answer.
Yeah, I guess my first comment is, your English is fine.
There's
no problem.
There are a lot of... There are a lot of problems. I appreciate this comment, but I know there are a lot of problems. I mean, maybe not necessarily problems, but people can clearly tell that I was not born here and growing up here. But anyway, yeah,
well,
thank you so much for the comment.
Yeah, I mean, that's true of any first-generation immigrant. You're going to bring your accent with you. You know, it doesn't matter where you came from. If it was Ireland or Poland or... you know, Mexico, you're going to have that accent, you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the second and third generation, it just sort of, you know, it's been described as a melting pot, and it takes time for things to melt.
Yeah.
So, but there's nothing wrong with your English. I just want to let you know, you're perfectly...
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, your vocabulary is great. Your sentence structure is probably better than most Americans.
I thought about that. The reason for me to bring up this background, this background, is because I noticed, in this company, at least in this specific company, I also did a Google search. Almost all employee I saw, almost all the, let's say, agents I saw, are with, a Chinese last name. So that's the reason I brought it up, because it did get spread as a certain group as a unit. So almost everyone I know in this group, according to their introduction, almost everyone I know in this group are Chinese immigrants. So I think it did develop through this way, and that's why I brought it up. Otherwise, I wouldn't.
Yeah, like we talked about briefly this afternoon, I heard from a guy, it had to be at least 8 or 10 years ago, but he was a former Amway Platinum, which means he had about 100 people or so in his downline, and he was told by his upline that, and this is up in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, which happens to be where a lot of the people from Somalia, you know, when they had their civil war, and they immigrated to the United States, and a lot of them just ended up in Minneapolis for some reason. I don't know, you know, how or why they ended up there, but they're there. I don't know how you go from Somalia, which is near the equator, to the northern Minnesota area. But
yeah.
Anyway, they're there.
Yeah.
And he was told by his upline, that he said that he was taught, look, don't worry about it. Just get one of them. Because once you get one of them, they all trust each other, and it'll spread like wildfire.
Correct.
So just get one and then go from there. And it's just like what you're talking with the Chinese. I mean, if it was in past decades, we could have said the same thing about, you know, Germans, Italians, Irish. No matter where they came from, they tended, especially that first generation, to hang out together more because they had similar language, culture, food. You know, they had a lot of commonalities, and it's just natural to be around people that are similar to you. And until, you know, the assimilation occurred, which could take 2 or 3 generations, that's just the way it is. And there's still places in large cities where, you know, there's a Polish district, there's an Italian district, there's, you know, these different areas that are still largely populated by a particular ethnicity. And so it's just normal. You know, there's nothing unusual about it. But the MLMs do, you know, tend to take advantage in that way of that trust that you have for people that are similar to you. And Peter, I wanted to bring you into this if you had any questions or comments for Eric.
No, but just to basically confirm the stuff that Scott is saying with Eric, is, you know, we could pick out different MLM companies that are really big with the Latino market, like Herbalife. They did a whole movie on Herbalife, focusing on the Latino market over in California. And then you have your pastors of all types, so people with followings. And then you have a lot of people, like you said, you're Chinese, and then there's the blacks, and then there's the Mormons, and there's the whatever. So that's affinity marketing, I think, is what many times people call it, and just where people are more comfortable with people like themselves. And that's where they're also more vulnerable, because most of the times they trust those people as well. So for the predatory practices, which is really, you know, I'm going to say it like this. I don't know that much about World Financial Group, WFG. Let's make a basic assumption that their products are good. So basic assumption, because usually in the insurance business, if you're selling those kinds of products, those products have to be good. It's the marketing approach that screws it up. It's that kind of a little bit of intimidation or posture that really turns you off. But I bet you the products themselves are probably pretty solid. They usually have to be in the kind of industry that's somewhat regulated.
Yes. Yes. For the product, I also did a – so sorry, if you don't mind me add something here.
Please.
For the product itself, I also did a little bit of research online. Not very thoroughly, but I did a bit of research. So they don't have their own product. They're agents, so they are selling products for other companies. So they're You can call them, like, let's say, like delegates or like agents. They are selling products from other companies. So yeah, so all the products are legitimate, but it may not be the one you truly needed. So I think one thing they are selling was called Index Universal Life Insurance. Have you heard about it?
Universal. But just to kind of echo what you're going to say next, we had a gal on our radio show that also was an Uber driver and Airbnb girl, and that was her biggest complaint, that she was really knowledgeable about the industry over time, but they were pushing the wrong product for her and most people's situations. So it was basically – so I just wanted to let you know that we're kind of a little familiar with that if people have been listening in, but I'd really like to hear your explanation as well.
Yeah, my – As I said, I'm also not an expert in the financial, let's say, field, or like I'm not an insurance agent myself. So I did the research mostly based on people's comments, like customers' comments. So the indexed universal life insurance, what I saw online, it is a real insurance like plan, but it's very rarely, let's say, used by the richest people in this country. So if you are so rich that you have all kinds of investments already, you have, let's say, real estate, you have the regular life insurance, you have your, let's say, 401k, you have all kinds already, and you need something more to diversify your investment, that's the way to go. That's like that's when people consider the indexed universal life insurance. But for regular people who can't even, let's say, who can't even put the full amount of the 401k monthly, it's not really useful. It's just not a very useful, let's say, product. And I'm sure if you talk to a, let's say, other agents, not from this specific company, if you talk about other agents from other insurance companies, they would give you, like, let's say, an analysis on that too. So you can't say like all other agents are against this company, right? So they are trying to tell you something that may not be the most the most suitable option for you. But indexed, let's say the IUL, indexed universal life insurance, this is very expensive, so they got the most income by selling it. That's why they are very willing to sell it to people. But it may not be the most suitable one for you. And you know, like for investment, if it's something that is not a suitable option, it could be a bad option. For example, if you're not rich enough, you really shouldn't buy a very luxurious house, right? Or like a very luxurious car. It's just not a very, very smart investment. But they do sell that to, let's say, people who don't make that much money, and people who are not even middle class. Like, they do sell those things to. Also, their clients are mostly Chinese immigrants, so a lot of them may not even speak English very fluently. They wouldn't know, okay, there are better options or there are other options. So they did like develop their clients through this way. That's what I learned online, and it also seems like a way, because the guy I used to respect for, he already tried to get me, let's say, into this, the indexed universal life insurance. And you remember, as I said, during the dinner party, they said like, I ask a question like, why is your premium, why is your selection of the investment plan better than other, let's say, agents or like other financial advisors? And the women, the upline, said like, well, if you ask this question, it's because you didn't listen to the presentation very carefully. Go back and listen to them again. So in my opinion, all those presentations and all the tutoring sessions, if you join in, that would happen after you join in, are going to be the brainwash, let's say, process. So like after you listen to all of them, they have their way to reason and to make you feel buying that is the best investment option you can have for your life. So
yeah, and
not very right for me.
Yeah, I think you're exactly spot on with that, Eric. And let me translate what she was saying when she said, that means you didn't listen to the presentation. Here's what she was really saying is, look, that product is going to make you more money when you sell it to somebody else. So it's not them you should be thinking about. It's the amount of money that you can put in your own pocket. Now, she didn't use those words, but that's really what she was saying when she said you weren't paying attention, because, you know, I'm sure the presentation went into the multi-level nature of the business and how when you're selling these products that are more profitable for you versus appropriate for the person buying them, that it's just greed. You know, it's not trying to help people other than yourself, what it boils down to. And I want to make one more point, too. It's interesting that, number one, they withheld the name of the World Financial Group, which is normal, by the way, for any MLM. Most MLMs you know, put that off as long as they can, for the same reason that you did the research. They don't want people doing research. They want people to become interested to where they're more interested in joining than they are in believing the research that they do. So they're trying to overcome that barrier, if you will, of people doing their own research and then deciding not to do it. And so they want to get you in as far as they possibly can, so that even if you do see that information that is critical of the MLM, you might join anyway. And that's sort of the, you know, the game that's being played. And the second point is they often don't give you the real name of the MLM itself. They often have a group that has a name that has nothing to do with World Financial Group. It's like Freedom Fighters, or, you know, the group that I belong to in Amway was Legacy Business Group, you know, which, if, you know, if you, it has nothing to do with Amway as far as the words. It's just a subgroup under Amway where they're promoting their own tool scam. And by the way, the Amway products, as an aside, but that's what they often do too. So even if you're not, or even if you are told a name, it may not be the name of the company. It might be the name of the group. And sometimes it's much harder to find information on the name of the group than it is the company name, because they also often also use very common words. Like there used to be a group at Amway called Team. Well, if you Google the word team, you know, you're going to find all kinds of sports-related stuff, but you're probably not going to find MLM-related stuff. And so they use these common words to try to hide your ability to search information about it. So it's very sneaky, I have to say that. In a way, they were more upfront with you than a lot of people, you know, where they're told this other name, and then you wouldn't even know that World Financial Group is behind it. So there's all kinds of games that are played, I guess is my point. So
I totally agree with you. They do have another name. They do have another name. I forgot the other name, but they told me the real name. So maybe they think the World Financial Group itself is already, how to say that, is already attractive enough. I don't know. Maybe they think that's already attractive enough. But still, on Reddit, even on Reddit, you can find stories about the WFG, and people are sharing like their experience with them. And it all sounds like very familiar with my experience. They would try different ways to see if you are the kind that can be intimidated, and they would try to see if you have, let's say, if you are greedy, like if you want to, if you are eager to make easy money, they would like to know that. There are a lot of, like, I mean, during the conversation with them, there are a lot of psychological plays. There are a lot of, let's say, psychological or like mental manipulations. Like I can figure that out later after I learn all the truth. But yeah, there are a lot of manipulations, I can tell.
Yeah, no doubt. When you get a chance to reflect on those things, because when you're in it, you're just trying to take in information. But then afterwards, when you start reflecting on those things, you go, yeah, that was really manipulative. You know, they were trying to appeal to my emotions. They were telling me only the part of the story they wanted me to hear and not the whole story. And so there's a lot of that goes on with a lot of MLMs that they're just not upfront. You know, it's just the way it is. Now, I think that's actually illegal. That's called business fraud, because if you're offering a business and you leave out material facts, then that's considered fraudulent. And again, I'm frustrated with the FTC for not going after these companies stronger regarding that issue. You know, how could you possibly tell half the story and expect somebody to make a good decision based on partial information? Now there are companies, you're probably familiar with franchises, like restaurant franchises, the post office type franchises. There's all kinds of different franchises around, and those fall under a whole separate rules under the FTC. And if you're a franchise, which the FTC defines as if you have to make a $500 or more initial investment, then you're considered a franchise opportunity. And in that set of laws, there's a lot of disclosure required, a lot more than an MLM. And the problem with MLMs is they won't charge you $500 to start, like they only asked you for $100. But over a very short period of time, you'll be spending hundreds and even thousands of dollars, you know, to get into the training, to buy, you know, the the training materials,
the
all this kind of thing.
Yes.
Exactly.
Correct.
And so
exactly.
They know how to manipulate the laws, too. And I think there should be some kind of a disclosure on that that's required as far as how much money they are promoting that you spend. Yeah, go ahead.
They work it this way. So first you need to spend $100 to them as like registration fee. Like that's already very weird. Like, I'm sure like the audience also like YouTube, everybody has been like job hunting already, and no real company would ask the newcomer employee to pay for the, let's say, background check or things like that. They would cover it. They would not ask the applicant to pay for that. That's already a weird thing. The only explanation is that they reach out too many people and they really cannot afford, you know, like the background check for everybody they reach out to. But that's the first thing they would ask for you. And yes, when you join and you can choose not to continue, then you just pay $100 for nothing. But if you continue, there are more and more things that you need to pay. But you eventually it will be all like you paid it by voluntarily. For example, if you want to sell insurance, you need to get a license. So there are examinations you need to take. There is like a training fee for that, and there are like book fee. There are book and like material fee. And after that, like to better understand the product, you will need to buy their product. The one I said is the indexed universal life insurance, for example. You will need to buy it, and then you spend more money. And then you just go and deeper and deeper, and at a point you just feel like you can't go because you spent so much already. That's another manipulation in my opinion. So you did spend all the money by yourself, by your own decision, but you are lured into this process, if you understand what I mean. You if you know it from the beginning, you probably won't do that. Won't make the decision. But at first, they just tell you it's only $100, and in the worst scenario, you just wait $100, waste $100. That's what they told me as well, and I'm sure that's what they would tell everybody. In the worst scenario, you just spend $100 for nothing, but you can spend $100, right? They just asked me that way, but once you spend the $100, you are on the boat. And you will be like spending more and more, just wish to gain more from your investment, your all like energy or time or money investment in this specific business, so-called business. And then you get deeper and deeper into it, and you find yourself like hard to get rid of it. So
you put so much into it, like you say, over time. Then you want to make it back, and so you're reluctant to get out because you've sunk so much into it, and you're being told this by the upline too, by the way, that hey, you're getting closer and closer to making money. You know, you've got all the training, you've got all the experience, so just keep at it, and you'll turn this around and start making, you know, a real profit. That's part of the shtick too, is that sort of emotional thing where you really don't want to back out after you've spent so much time, money, and effort into something, and you're being told, hey, if you quit now, it's the wrong time to quit because you're so close to, you know, breaking through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of that manipulation. Now, I have to say, there's probably a lot of things like that. It's not just MLM. You know, if somebody told me, back when I was, 17, 18 years old and about to enter college, how difficult it would be. And then when I, joined the Navy, the nuclear Navy, that I'd be standing what they call five and dime watches, where you're on watch for 5 hours, off for 10, and on for five, and your body clock is constantly on a daily basis being rotated around. It's just brutal on the body and, you know, and the mind. And if they had told me all of that stuff, I may not have joined. So it's not just MLMs, but I do think that MLMs go a lot further as far as manipulating people and, you know, just taking it to extreme amounts where, and again, you know, it's supposed to be a business deal. You're supposed to be upfront about the material facts. And so, you know, it's kind of different than other experiences I've had, you know, where if you think back, you go, man, that was hard. I don't think I would have done that if I knew all the things I had to go through to get to where I am. I don't know if you feel that in any way, but, you know, I think that's not unique to MLMs. It's just that they take it further, and it would be so much easier and better if they were just up front. And that's kind of how I feel about that whole thing. Because I got an engineering degree too, like you did, apparently. You were saying you have an engineering background.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to me, that's just life. Peter, I think you probably had similar experiences. If, you know, if you look back on it, if you knew everything, you know, looking back, that you would have experienced to get to where you are, you may have made a different decision at the beginning. But that's life. I mean, that's just the way things are. You know, we all have those experiences. It's just that it's so manipulative in MLMs, and it doesn't need to be. It shouldn't be, in, you know, my opinion. So I'll let you guys comment on that, Peter or Eric.
Well, I have a question for Eric. Related to the people themselves, do you think I know that we're talking about, like, mind games and maybe some techniques that they were using. Do you think these are things that are done by design, or do you think these things that are done by them just repeating the things that they've learned from others, or do you think that these are just control freaks?
That's a good question. I was about to bring it up. I think the scary part is all those tricks they have used on me are specifically designed for me. Because, like, every time I talk to the respected guy, as I mentioned, my friend, every time I talk to him, he would have a conversation with his upline. Even at dinner party, I noticed they have, like, separate sessions, like, they just two of them in the same room and discussing stuff. Even that, I noticed that. And also, like, I can tell he was trying to figure out my personality through our conversation, and he was taking notes about what I said. So there was one time in the presentation, in the so-called presentation, like, the presenter were asking, is there any questions from people? And nobody answered. You know, those are kind of the embarrassing, like, moments in the presentation. Nobody answered. Nobody raised questions. And this guy, my friend, this guy raised his hand and actually asked a question that I had discussed with him a while ago. He asked it out as if it was his question, but apparently that is asked, like, from him, but it was answered for me. So he wanted me to receive, let's say, feedback from his upline there. And since I didn't ask a question, he asked it for me. And I think all the things he have done, all the things they have done, they designed it for me specifically. That's also why they probably prefer to develop their clients, or, like, the I would call it victims. They would like to find the victims within the same, let's say, immigration group, because they know us much better than how they know the, let's say, the citizens, like, native citizens here. They know us much better. So they know what could be the weakness. For example, he assumed I would not be able to reject them, because that's the culture. He assumed that, and he did, like, use some threatening, not literally threatening, but, like, the emotion was, like, I would call it threatening. It's a threatening emotion during the convincing process, And he also tried to make me feel guilty, like I did so many things for you, but you still don't want to even give a try. Like there are processes like that. So I think I wouldn't call him control freak. Like, in fact, he didn't do it very well. I still find all those, let's say, I found all those problems in the chicks. Like I found the flaws. So he didn't do it very well. He was too impatient. He kept asking questions that made me nervous and also made me suspect the intention. He is not a control freak. None of them is. But they did have design, let's say, what's the next step? Like, maybe we should invite him over and I should talk to him in person. And at a point, because he talked, the guy I said, like my friend, talked to me all the time. And he just still cannot convince me. So at a point, he realized, okay, maybe I should have my upline talk to him and use some other tricks. My understanding is you can also say they repeat this like all the time because all their clients are Chinese immigrants and we definitely share a lot of things in common. So, but I think they also tailored all the tricks for specific people because they always develop the clients or the victims from their friends or like their significant others or like their, you know, like how to say that, their family members. So they know them very well. They can easily tailor the cheeks. That would be my answer.
Got it. Okay, so one of the questions that I've been thinking about during this whole time is what kind of food did they serve? Did they serve Chinese food or did they serve like hamburgers and hot dogs?
They serve very good food. So that's another thing. Like I wouldn't feel guilty. If they invite me again, I would come over again. I would just never join. That's something they really never like speculate about me. Like I'm already in their standards, by their standards, I'm doing something really shamelessly. Like I'm just taking but not giving any feedbacks like they want. But yeah, they serve very good food, to be honest. That I cannot deny. They serve very good food. That's why I would like to join Lost Duck. And if they invite me again, I would join again. I would just never join the business. I can join the free food session. I don't mind. I don't mind at all.
Yeah, I'm right with you there. I love, and it was Chinese food, right?
Yeah, it's Chinese food.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I love Chinese food.
I think by living here for more than 10 years, I don't share a lot of, let's say the guilty thing. I don't share that personality at all with them. I know they want me to feel guilty, but I don't because they invited me and they kind of forced me to come. So why not?
Right. You said you were married too, right, Eric?
No, I'm not married. Not yet.
You're not married. Okay.
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm still young.
Yeah.
I'm still young.
Yeah,
that's why the guy was a senior. That's why I said.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because I thought you said you were married earlier, but I was mistaken, and I was thinking the whole time. In Amway, they try to get both the husband and the wife involved, but since you're not married, then that doesn't make any sense.
I was just saying, like, I can tell you the guy who tried to get me in, both he and his wife are in. So, it is the case.
Yeah, so she's...
If I'm married, he would want me to join, yes.
Right. He would have gotten your wife involved in the meetings and so forth.
Yeah.
So when you were in these meetings... Generally, how many people were there? And maybe some of them were small, maybe some of them were larger. And how many people do you think were already in World Financial Group as opposed to somebody like you that was just a prospect?
That's very difficult for me to answer because due to the COVID, all the meetings are held like online, like this. So I don't really see them in person. I can only hear their, let's say, if they ask any questions, I can hear. I don't really know who they are. I don't know how they dress like. I don't know how they would sit with each other. I don't know any details. But I would say usually there are at least 50 to 100 people, sometimes even more when they say, like, this guy is super famous. the guy who is going to present is super famous, that at that time there could be more audience. But I can't tell how many are from the World Financial Group and how many are newcomers. I can't tell. But a lot of them I can tell are, yeah.
How about when you were invited over to the house to eat dinner? Could you tell?
That's specifically for me. That's just
for
me.
You.
So I'm the only one. Yeah, I'm the only one who is not.
And they kind of made
so
that clear beforehand. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's only for me. Yeah.
That's only
for me. Yes. They always develop from the close friend or family member. So that's not surprising.
Yeah, and to go back to what Peter was saying, Peter, I know in Amway, we had scripts. I mean, we had word for word, how you would open up a conversation like on a telephone, and then there was, several different ways that they could respond, and you would just track that down to the next, line item and how you should respond. And it was very much, a very organized script. And they even have cards, small, 2 by 3 inches. And you can just sort of, and then we're talking 50 or 75 cards where there's a standard response for any kind of question that you can imagine. And then those were things that were also, of course, sold, that you could then learn how to respond, quote unquote, correctly to pretty much any question you can imagine. So in Amway, it was very well developed. And I would think, Eric, if you had gotten involved in the World Financial Group, you probably would have experienced something very similar, because that's why your upline went to their upline to get information. In fact, in Amway, we were taught basically, have minimal contact with the prospect, always direct them to the upline. And a question for you also, do you know how long your immediate upline, your friend that you had known, how long he was in World Financial Group before he approached you?
I would say less than he probably just got in too. He probably just got in too because he has another job before that. I know that he has another job before that. So he probably just joined this year or maybe the end of last year probably.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious because, the newer you are, the less you know and the more you have to depend on your upline. So, that's just kind of a natural thing.
Correct.
It does sound like he was pretty new. Did he ever introduce you to any of his other downline?
No, never. I'm even thinking I might be his first one.
Right.
I'm even thinking that way. Yeah.
You may not have been the first person he contacted, but you may have been the first person that could have made the decision to join. Although a lot of people, quite frankly, join and quit pretty much soon after they join. So he may have had some downline before and they quit. But generally they try to get you around other downline just to show you, the social pressure of, look, these people join, what's your problem, right? That's kind of the, the social pressure part of this that they make it look like if you reject it, you're abnormal, right?
Yeah, I don't think that would work with me. I'm the kind who would like to eat again at his place. I don't think that would work for me.
I would too. Maybe you need to introduce me to him. I'd like to come over for some good Chinese food too.
Sure.
Peter, you're on that, right?
Yeah. I'm in.
Well, if he contact me again for food, I will let you know.
So let me ask you, this is a Chinese food question. It has nothing to do with MLM. Was the Chinese food at this dinner much different than what you would find at a typical Chinese restaurant in your area?
Well, I mean, depends. The question should be answered this way. I don't know what is the typical Chinese food you eat usually. Because I know there are a lot of, Americanized Chinese restaurants, and that's where most, American people would go to. But, he is making the more authentic Chinese food. And there are, people prefer American people prefer authentic Chinese food too, but I don't see too many. So if you are talking about the combination of, let's say, stir-fried broccoli with, let's say, beef, if you're talking about those, like, Americanized version, he is making much better Chinese food than that, like, in my opinion. He is making more authentic ones. But, like,
right,
if you're
right.
talking about the authentic one in Chinatown, that's similar to what he made. So in Chinatown, there are some authentic ones. In some cities, like let's say, New York or, like, Philadelphia or, like, Los Angeles, in the Chinatown, you can get some real authentic one. So he is making food more similar to those ones, I would say.
Yeah, and I know when I was in the Navy and we were, you know, traveling around different countries, I would always go past sort of, you know, what I considered the, you know, the visitor area, and I would go back into the towns and go explore, you know, behind all of the flashy stuff so that I could get authentic food. You know, go into some small town, some small restaurant that I knew the locals, you know, ate there. And I have to tell you, one of my experiences, I think it was in Japan, where I went into this restaurant that was obviously authentic Japanese because that's all the people that were there, and it was sort of out of the way. It wasn't, you know, the touristy area, so to speak. And of course, I didn't know a lick of Japanese language, so I would just look around at the tables near me and point to different food, you know, give me one of those, give me one of those. And so they brought in the rice. And, you know, sometimes when you have rice, it kind of sticks together. Well, this particular rice, every single grain was separate, and it didn't stick together at all.
What you're talking about.
Yeah, so I was trying to eat this rice, you know, authentically with chopsticks, which I'm not very good at because I'm not Oriental, but, you know, I wanted to get into the local, you know, habits and everything. So I'm trying to eat this rice out of this bowl, and I could only get one grain at a time, and half the time it would drop off my chopsticks, and I'm thinking, I'm not going to be able to eat enough for the calories that I'm burning. I'm going to sit here and die trying to eat dinner. And so I'm looking around like, how do these people do it? And, of course, as you probably know, they pick up the bowl, they put it up there to their mouth, and they scoop it in.
Yeah.
And so I learned how to eat rice the correct way. And it was just one of those funny life experiences, you know, when you're new to you know, a thing that you just don't understand. How do they do this? And then it makes perfect sense once you observe others and how they actually do it. So it's just one of those things, you know, we're all very much the same, but we have our differences, you know, I just always enjoyed going into other cultures and learning about them. That was something that I really enjoyed doing. Did you have any other Chinese food or other questions, Peter?
No, we're good to go. But I enjoyed the conversation because it's obviously indicative of the style of the recruiting, a little bit of intimidation, a little mystery, pressure, all those types of things, and may not necessarily be in the recruit's best interest, but it's in their best interest. Manipulation, we've seen it before, and of course, it seems like the WFG group incorporates some of that. We don't know enough about the whole company, but from the stories that we've heard, there's a lot of that going on, and then also pushing a product line that's not necessarily in the person's best interest, because I'm not really sure if the people actually learn that much about the product line. They just want to keep a duplicatable, more profitable system. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, all good points. I agree with you completely. And this is typical of any MLM. These tactics is kind of how it's done. You know, I have not really heard much of a different story as far as the tactics that are used. So whether it's World Financial Group or Amway or Herbalife, you know, it's all on the lifestyle. It's all on, you know, the flash, so to speak, and just sort of slowly reeling you in and getting you to spend money and commit time and effort to the point where you really don't want to back out because you think, because you're being told, that you're getting closer and closer to being successful. So, Eric, I try to ask my guests towards the end of the show, because we've talked about a lot of things, But was there anything maybe we didn't cover that you were thinking about before the show or you thought of during the show that you wanted to tell people? I just want to kind of give you that opportunity to, you know, say something else that came to mind or you wanted to talk about before the show and maybe we didn't, you know, quite get to it or we didn't cover it in depth as much as you would like. So, you know, go right ahead if there's anything like that. Did we lose there?
Hello?
Yep, he's still here. So did you have anything that you wanted to cover? I do have one last question that might take a little bit of time.
And by the way,
it has nothing to do with MLM or World Health Group, but since you're a Chinese guy and we have you on the phone, you might be able to give us some insight. So, you can ask.
I don't have other things to, yeah.
No, okay. So totally unrelated. You know, they call this the Chinese virus. You know, this Wuhan thing, this COVID thing. I had some contacts in China doing some importing, and they were really interested in sending us, and I'm talking about towards the tail end of 2019, sending us PPE, the masks, the gloves, and stuff like that. And so there's something going on here that's really bad. You know, make sure that you're protecting yourself and your family. And it was kind of scary for them way back when the coronavirus thing was starting to hit China first. So I was getting notifications that there was a Chinese virus before there was a Chinese virus here in the United States. So do you have any comments on anything related to the virus? Because you're here in the United States. You probably still have some contacts over there. Is there anything that we're not hearing in the United States that we probably should know?
Sorry. Can you repeat the question a little bit?
Sure.
What you want me to answer.
So you're Chinese, and you have contacts with people maybe still in China, and you know to use Donald Trump, he called it the Chinese virus, and
here we
have a gentleman who's on the ground in the Chinese community that has contacts with people probably still in China. My contacts, we deal with a few people that do importing. And my contacts were telling us in like January and February of 2020, there's something really going on here. We don't know what it is, but people are getting sick. And they were willing to ship us, because some of them were importers, they were shipping us masks and gloves and a whole bunch of other stuff as well, because they said, get ready. We don't know what this is, but it's really kind of nasty. So without sounding like a conspiracy thinker, like a Wuhan virus and a bioweapon or anything else like that, do you have any comments on, from your perspective, what's going on with COVID? And from the Chinese community, what's going on with COVID as well?
That's actually a bit difficult for me to answer because I'm not an expert in the, let's say, I'm not an expert in vaccination. I'm also not an expert in the biomedical. But like, first of all, I would be honest with you. I don't like the way Donald Trump called, let's say, Chinese virus. Like, I don't like being associated with virus just because I was Chinese. And there are people, I mean, it happened once to me that people, I think it's last May or sometime, people, on the street, some people just called me like, hey, you Chinese virus, go back to your country or something like that. I was called that once. So it's a little bit like personal. I simply don't like when people associate, let's say, the two words together. And I know you didn't do that intentionally, and you were just asking for an opinion. And second, like, I don't really know what I can comment on this. It's a tragedy, right? It's not a very pleasant thing for the world. And I personally don't believe any conspiracy. I would say I don't believe in any conspiracy. And I mean, personally, I always follow the guidelines according to the CDC. Like, if they say we should wear a mask, I do that. And I took vaccination. That's really all what I can do. And in the Chinese community, I would say most people I know are very cautious about it. I'm already the one who is not so cautious about the virus. For example, I go to gym now. I go to the public, and at the places that don't require masks, I don't wear a mask. I'm already like the probably one of the least cautious people in the community at this moment, I would say. But I mean, is that what you want to hear, or you want to hear more constructive?
No, that's fine. I figured we have a gentleman who's really close to the Chinese community that we might as well ask that question, because I can't tell you. I'm not there, and I'm not in people's homes, and I don't know what's going on with people and relatives you might have somewhere else. So I didn't know if they were really concerned, not concerned. It's a conspiracy or whatever. I figured, you know, I might as well ask you since you're there.
Yeah, I would answer it this way. Like, in China, people are really very cautious about it. Like, in my opinion, it's a little bit overreacting. But I mean, it is what it is. That's also why I haven't been back for a long time. Because if I visit China now, I will have to spend, I think, close to 21 days, maybe 21 days. I have to spend in a hotel. Like literally, like just after I landed in China, I will have to stay in a hotel for 21 days. And I don't even have that many pay time off.
Yeah. Right, so you would have to do that before you even started your trip to China. Like if you wanted to see a family member, you'd have to spend the first 21 days in a hotel, and then you can start your trip.
Yeah, in a hotel.
Wow.
Yeah, then, I don't even have that many pay time off, right? So,
right.
So that's why I said like it's a little bit overreacting in China, because they want to, maybe it's a political need, I don't know. They want the number to be zero. They want the number of affected people to be zero. They're very like serious about it. I mean, it did work, it looks like, but the price is that people cannot really go out, and like people like me cannot really go back easily. So yeah, there are price for that. And I wouldn't comment if it's wrong or right, because at this point, it's still going on, literally.
Like,
too early to make any judgment on that. And for here, I would say people are more laid back. The community are more laid back than the ones in, let's say, my friends in China. Here, people are more laid back. Even Chinese community, people are more laid back, as far as I know. People wouldn't take it that seriously, I would say most people still are more cautious and they definitely follow the CDC's, let's say, guidelines. I would say that's what I can comment.
Right.
And for me personally, I just follow the guidelines, and I don't really believe in any conspiracy, I would say.
Got it. Okay, good. I figured, well, while we have you here, we might as well ask those questions, because
I'm glad to share.
You know, we're given information from our newspapers and from whatever, and most of it today is propaganda. It's not news anymore. So when we get an opportunity to actually speak to somebody that's living it, that's a better thing. So that's all the big questions that I had. So, Scott, back to you.
Yeah, that was I guess, Eric, have you visited China in past years previous to the coronavirus?
Yeah, before the coronavirus, yes.
After that, okay.
It's just too difficult to plan the trip. And also, since that's the case, I would like to remind Peter, right? I would like to tell Peter, like, I also haven't been back since the pandemic started. So,
right.
My opinion may not really reflect the reality. You know what I mean? I'm also listening from my friends in China, and also seeing the news on TV. So, yeah, I think I know a little bit more than you do about the situation in China right now. But I also mostly based on my opinions on the second-handed, not the first-handed information, but second-handed information. And that's what I want to add.
Right. Well, yeah, like I said, good. It was a sincerely inquisitive question. When I have somebody that's in something, I like to ask those questions that usually we don't get a chance to talk about. So even though it might not be related to MLM, it's related to related to the stuff that you might have access to. Now, one last question is relative to MLM. Do you have any comment on MLM in China? Or is most of your experience been here?
Interestingly, I never had any experience with the multi-level marketing. I've never had any experience with those business in China. And in China, I think it's illegal. If I'm not wrong, it should be illegal if that's still the case.
Yeah, you're right.
At least.
You're right. Yeah, it is illegal.
Yeah.
They can
so
do direct sales.
I was
sales.
A little bit surprised. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
they can do direct sales, but
like,
yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say they can do direct sales, but they can't do multi-level. So, yeah, that's
yeah,
the difference.
Yeah, they cannot do multi-level. I was very surprised when I found out like it's not illegal here, but there must be a reason. I don't know, but it's legal here as far as I'm concerned, right? The multi-level marketing is legal here.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are
I never really
MLM.
Had experience.
Yeah, there are MLM companies that are operating in China, but they're putting up a front as if they're not really MLM. Like Herbalife
yes.
does a wonderful job in China as far as producing a lot of business, and they say they're not MLM, but they're really performing like an MLM. So they're just good at
yeah.
covering it up. But that's only because the Chinese market is so big. Okay, perfect. So, Scott, back to you. Oops, Scott, you still here? I think Scott's here.
I'm sorry. I'm here. I was on mute. Sorry about that.
No problem. Okay, so I'll let you wrap
it
up.
I was just going to say, Eric and I were talking this afternoon before the show, and he said, gee, I don't know if I can talk for, even a half hour about my experience. And here we are, Eric, an hour and a half in. And I just wanted to let you wrap it up, Eric. Is there anything that you wanted to mention that we didn't get to or didn't get to in depth enough? Anything you wanted to mention?
Just some summary. Like first of all, I think I want to tell like everybody, like if you're approached by your friends or like your family member or even significant others about the multi-level marketing like business, better do the research by yourself online and collect all the information by yourself and make the decision by yourself. Don't be influenced by their opinions. And I'm not trying to say don't do it, even though I wouldn't do it, but I would say don't be influenced too much by people who try to get you into the business. That's the first thing I want to say. And the second thing is I want to say, especially for like fellows, let's say immigrant fellows who are, let's say, approached by the other immigrant, let's say close friend, there's nothing wrong to say no to them if you don't want to do it. It's not about like rejection is not wrong in this situation. Like I would say just follow your heart. It was also very difficult for me to decide to block that guy, to be honest. But later I realized if he was trying so hard to get me into a business like this, he probably didn't treat me as a friend anyway. So I don't regret for, let's say, blocking him. And really, those are the two things I want to summarize. And that's it. I'll say thank you for giving me this chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And you made some really good points, including, don't be hesitant to reject somebody, if you don't feel right about it, for sure. Because I know it's true in any culture, but I think in the Chinese culture, anywhere in the Far East, it's even stronger, where that sort of group unity is a stronger force, social force, than you'll find particularly in the United States, because we're all a bunch of individuals by and large. But over there, it's very much, being part of the culture, being part of the team, the group is more important than the individual. So it's very easy to get pulled into something like that in China or having a Chinese or any other, you know, Far East culture in your background. So, yeah, you did a great job. This has been just a terrific show. I really appreciate you coming on, and hopefully, you know, you can give this show link to other people and educate them before they even get approached, because that's the right time to help people is before they're even approached by somebody, so that they can understand how to respond properly when they are approached. And you know, they probably will be at some point. So it's just really good to keep spreading this around. And like Peter mentioned, I think earlier in the show, write a complaint to the FTC. It's, you know, Federal Trade Commission. It's FTC.gov. You'll see, you know, you can submit a complaint. You can make it anonymous if you want. But the FTC operates off the number of complaints they get, and so every one of them counts. And so I would encourage you to do it, and I would encourage you to encourage others to do it as well. You know, if they've been approached or scammed by an MLM that they just thought was shady. So I guess that's it for this week, Peter. I just really appreciate Eric coming on and spending all this time with us and giving us these really, really good insights, you know, not only generic MLM stuff, but, you know, how it affects the Chinese cultural background. That whole dynamic is really interesting to me. And I'll let you close it out, Peter. Thanks.
Perfect. Well, thanks, Eric, for being here. Happy Labor Day for those people who are celebrating Labor Day. And we will catch you next week on Building Fortress Radio. If you go to buildingfortressradio.com/Scott-Johnson, you'll be able to hear this as well as previous shows. And, Scott, I know we forgot to give your Facebook site, which is the best place for people to find you. So how about a shout-out for your Facebook site?
Yeah, it's got my three websites. It's got my YouTube link, and it's got the link to this show. To the series of shows. We've done this almost 6 years now, every week pretty much. And so, yeah, that link is facebook.com/ScottTex, that's T-E-X, Johnson, all one word, Scott Tex Johnson. And you can find all those links at that one spot. So enjoy yourself. You can find my email there, too, if you want to email me and, you know, start communicating like that. So thanks, Peter. And thanks, Eric.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Eric. Bye for now, everyone.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.